Hey, Sam.
Hey.
We're here to talk about what happened to FTX.
A few days ago, our colleague Alexander Osipovich sat down with Sam Bankman-Fried. Bankman-Fried is the founder and former CEO of the crypto exchange FTX, which imploded last month. Alexander asked Bankman-Fried about FTX's collapse and how $8 billion of customer money went missing. FTX is now facing multiple investigations from the Justice Department and other federal agencies.
Sam, what you've described sounds, at a minimum, like gross negligence. Obviously, there are a lot of people there who think that you committed outright fraud. Do you expect to go to prison?
I'm not focusing on that right now. Look, I don't think that I did. I don't think I tried to commit fraud anywhere here. I was trying to do the best I could. Obviously, that wasn't nearly as good as I thought it was. But honestly, it's not what I'm focusing on right now. I don't think that's where, it just isn't about me. Like, I mean, obviously there's a lot of attention on me here, but this is about the customers at the end of the day. Like, there's one of me, there are millions of them. And I don't think it's right for me to be focusing on what happens to me here. I think I should be focusing on what can be done for customers. For a little while after the crash, I was fairly quiet. I was sort of told to be by a number of, lawyers and counselors, and ultimately decided that's not the right thing to do here. That for better or for worse, people should get to know what happened.
Welcome to The Journal, our show about money, business, and power. I'm Kate Linebaugh. It's Tuesday, December 6th. Coming up on the show, an interview with Sam Bankman-Fried.
This episode is brought to you by C3 AI. Insights. You need them to solve business problems, but buried in volumes of disparate data, they're seemingly invisible. C3 Generative AI enables business leaders to instantly access secure, hallucination-free, verifiable insights from a unified knowledge source, all with a natural language search. Turn the invisible into the obvious with C3 Generative AI. Learn more at c3.ai.
Alexander flew out to the Bahamas, where FTX was headquartered, to talk to Bankman-Fried. It wasn't their first time talking. You interviewed Sam Bankman-Fried a few months ago. How was this interview different?
It was very different. This summer, when I interviewed Sam, he was at the top of his game, and he would say things that reflected just insane ambitions. Basically, he felt that FTX could kind of take over the world. So fast forward to this last week when I went to go visit him. It was really weird. I went to Albany, which is the gated community within the Bahamas where he lives. He's had a problem there with paparazzi stalking him. It was in a condo where the blinds were closed, and they said that was in part because of those paparazzi. The condo was actually company housing for people who had worked for FTX, who had quit and left the country in a rush after the company collapsed last month. And you could still see some of their personal effects lying around.
Last time Alex interviewed Bankman-Fried, they talked about how FTX was bailing out other crypto companies and helping the industry through a difficult time. This time, the questions were very different.
What everybody wants to know is there are $8 billion of money that have gone missing. What happened to the money?
Yeah. So at a high level, and obviously you can drill into it, but at a high level, basically, Alameda Research had a margin position, a large one open on FTX, and that position got hit a few times and then got hit massively. That resulted in a position where the remaining assets were not able to generate nearly enough liquidity to be able to, close down that position. And that's how at a very high level, we got to where we are.
Alameda Research was the first company Bankman-Fried founded. It was a trading firm for cryptocurrency. FTX was a crypto exchange built for consumers to invest in crypto. Usually, businesses like these would be separate, but in this case, they were interlinked. And customer money from FTX ended up at Alameda. Alameda used that money on risky bets. Now, hundreds of thousands of FTX customers are asking what happened to their money.
How much of this customer money was wired to the Alameda bank accounts?
I don't have the numbers in front of me, but my estimation is I think more than half.
More than half?
More than half of Alameda's total position came via that method.
So how many billions of dollars are we talking about, at least ballpark?
I think north of five.
So more than $5 billion were transferred into these Alameda bank accounts.
Yep.
It was then credited so that customers saw that they had that balance
right
on their screens.
Yep.
What actually happened to the dollars sitting in those bank accounts?
One phrasing of it one could use would be to say that, well, Alameda then credited, Alameda effectively sent those dollars from its FTX account to the user. But that's a ledger transfer, of course. And outside of that, the answer is they were wired to Alameda. And that's, I can only speculate about what happened after that.
So you don't know what happened to those $5 billion?
They're wired to Alameda. I wasn't running Alameda, but I can now go back and take a guess at what, where they were ultimately spent or used or something. But dollars are fungible with each other. And so it's not like there's, this $1 bill over here that you can trace through from start to finish. What you get is more just omnibus, pots of assets of various forms. And so it's not well defined to say where did that dollar end up versus where did this dollar end up if they both ended up in the same intermediary place.
What Bankman-Fried described was a system where customer money would be used by Alameda without that customer's explicit knowledge.
This is a problem where the money goes in,
yep,
and it seems to be used in a kind of a slush fund.
Right, and maybe another way of saying this is there should have been collateral, a lot of collateral required on that stub account or something like that. But I mean, there are lots of ways that one could have done this in a responsible way, that one could have done this that worked. Clearly, what we did was not one of them.
FTX also allowed customers to opt into a system where they could loan out their crypto to other users. The other users would borrow those funds to increase the size of their bets. This is something called margin trading. But opting in wasn't supposed to be the default setting.
I wanted to ask about the FTX terms of use.
Yep.
They say that you control the digital assets held in your account and they can't be loaned out, except there's also another part of the terms of use that talk about margin trading.
Yep.
In which there is actually language that says your money could be loaned out,
right,
and it could disappear if somebody's trade,
right,
goes bad. On FTX, did you have to opt in to do margin trading?
So for the peer-to-peer borrow lending order book, you did, yes.
How many people and how much money was actually in that?
I don't know exactly off the top of my head. I think it was, I want to say, $8 or $10 billion at the peak. I don't know what it is today.
We've spoken to people who are customers on FTX,
yep,
who didn't realize that they were in margin trading. They thought that,
right,
they might have been swept in by the form. They thought they might have never had a chance to opt in, but they ended up with margin trading accounts that they didn't realize.
I'd be happy to look. Well, sorry, that was an instinctual response. I would have been happy to look into that. I don't have access to the systems to look into that right now. But I can try and go back and look into exactly what procedures happened for whether people turned in, ended up in margin trading mode or not.
Were you sweeping people into margin trading and allowing their collateral to be loaned out?
I honestly, off the top of my head, I don't know exactly what procedures we used to determine whether an account was, you know, doing margin trading or participating in that. I do remember, you know, a way that people could have opted into it, but I don't know off the top of my head.
We'll be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Empower. If you're like most people, you've had your fair share of financial questions. Questions like, will you be able to afford a third kid? Will you be able to do everything you want when you retire? What if you outlive your savings? Empower knows these questions can be stressful, so they're here to help answer your what-ifs and empower what's next. Join 18 million Americans and take control of your financial future. Tap the banner to learn more or visit empower.com.
How well do we know the people we work with every day? We share lunches, jokes, and deadlines, but are we aware of the unseen struggles we often face silently? Stress and burnout, caregiving for a loved one, or feeling misunderstood at work. Through insight, awareness, and empathy, we can start to better see the issues our coworkers are dealing with, and that can make us and our companies healthier too. Join Holly Robinson-Pete and her guests on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare.
Why didn't you do more to disentangle FTX and Alameda?
I mean, I sure wish I had. And I'd give anything to go back and offboard Alameda from FTX a year and a half ago. What I have isn't going to be the world's most satisfying answer. It's just the answer to what was going through my head at the time. Alameda had dropped enormously. It had gone from something like 45% of volume in 2019 to something like 2% of FTX's volume by 2022. Alameda had become massively less important and had become effectively just one of many trading firms on the exchange.
For the past year, Bankman-Fried said he hasn't been running Alameda. That's been the job of 28-year-old Caroline Ellison, who was CEO of the firm and was at times romantically involved with Bankman-Fried.
Just with Alameda, you've said a few times that you weren't really aware of what was going on there.
Yep.
How is it that as a 90% owner of the firm and founder of the firm who was close with the leadership, you didn't know what was going on?
One thing is I was busy. I was, you know, FTX was a full-time job. I was more than a full-time job. And I didn't have enough brain cycles left to understand everything going on at Alameda if I wanted to. I also didn't want to because I was concerned about conflicts of interest. And I felt like it would be inappropriate for me to be, you know, looped into, you know, certainly to details of what was going on there. It caused me to not dig in very much, to not try to engage very much on what Alameda was doing. It was a huge oversight, obviously, but the honest answer is, I mean, obviously I should have been.
It feels a bit to me like possibly you are trying to shift some of the blame of what happened onto people at Alameda, including Caroline Ellison. Are you throwing Caroline under the bus?
It's not at all what I'm trying to do. And look, I'm sure that there's plenty of, you know, blame for losses, personal losses that to go around. But at the end of the day, FTX was a customer-facing platform, and I was the CEO of FTX. And that means that it was my responsibility to protect the customers of FTX, and it was my responsibility to do right by all of our stakeholders. And I clearly did not do a good job of that. I clearly did a very bad job of that in some very important ways. That wasn't anyone else's job or responsibility.
You were hanging out with Tom Brady and Gisele Bündchen. You became kind of a celebrity, a rock star at crypto conferences.
Yep.
Did the fame affect your judgment?
I think it distracted me. I think it's certainly, like, it's not even that I enjoyed it particularly. That's not the kind of thing that is incredibly satisfying or pleasurable or anything like that for me. But what it was, I think, was it was a sort of exciting thing to think about. It was an exciting, it opened a lot of opportunities and doors that seemed very exciting to be exploring. And my mind wandered and I got really distracted. I was thinking, is there some cool partnership opportunity that we could have with some giant name brand? Was there some, you know, tour we could have with some celebrity? I mean, these were things that were, I guess, somewhat seductive to think about and seemed like, I don't know if it was that it made me feel more important or something like that in my own eyes, or that it made me, maybe even some of it was an excuse for me to be able to be a little bit more lazy and to not have to remember all the details of what was going on. It absolutely distracted me and took my focus away from what mattered the most.
When you endorsed charitable projects, pledged to give away billions of dollars to charity, was your charitable giving sincere, or was it for publicity purposes?
When I was giving away tens, hundreds of millions of dollars, that was sincere. That was the end goal. That was what I cared about for an incredibly long time. When I pledged to give away $2,000 to some brand name charity as part of some promotion related to FTX's business, that was as much PR as anything else.
Sam, are you an ethical person?
I think I've tried as hard as I can to be one. I don't want to claim that I had anything like the impact that I was hoping to have on the world. Obviously, that's gone in a totally different direction, and I feel like shit about it. But I try to be it. That's what my goal is.
I think that what a lot of people are struggling with here is that, you know, you were an MIT physics major.
Yep.
You are, by all accounts, a very smart guy. How is it possible that you overlooked this more than $5 billion problem?
Yeah. I ask myself that a lot. I ask myself a lot how I made a series of mistakes that seem they don't just seem dumb. They seem like the type of mistakes I could see myself having ridiculed someone else for having made. Like, the kind of mistakes that I would have considered myself to have been above. The kind of mistakes I would have thought I wouldn't do that. That I understand how other people could make that mistake, but that I should have the strengths, the competency, the knowledge to not do that. And I think I got a little bit unfocused, and I think I sort of drifted away from the object level over the last few years, which is weird because that's one of the things that I most strongly didn't want to do and one of the things I most strongly associated with sort of failed leaders.
FTX is now in bankruptcy. And the person leading the company through that process has said that FTX used software to conceal the misuse of customer funds. Also, that Bankman-Fried is, quote, potentially compromised. After Alex returned from the Bahamas, we talked about his interview. How satisfying were his answers to your questions?
They were not satisfying. I felt like I'd gotten a bit of a sense of what might have been going on. Maybe the money was diverted to other purposes and not properly accounted for. I did not really feel like we got to the bottom of what was going on.
Do you think we're ever going to get to the bottom of it and find out what really happened?
I think eventually, once various investigators and lawyers and bankruptcy specialists have had a chance to pore through the books, interview former employees, we will have a picture of what happened. Whether they can get their money back, I don't think so. I find it very hard to imagine that the entire $8 billion hole is going to be filled through asset sales and other things that bankruptcy people do.
Do you feel like he understood his business?
So Sam has always been a really move fast kind of guy. Even this summer when I interviewed him for a previous article I wrote about deals he was making, he did these deals very quickly. And now one gets a sense that that might have been his approach all along to everything. Let's launch an exchange. Let's set up some bank accounts for the customer money. Let's go on, oh, why don't we go and, sign a sports sponsorship deal, start building out our brand. Let's move on to the other thing. I think that his approach may have been a recipe for the sort of disaster that we have seen.
That's all for today, Tuesday, December 6th. The Journal is a co-production of Gimlet and The Wall Street Journal. If you like our show, follow us on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. We're out every weekday afternoon. Thanks for listening. See you tomorrow.